intuition and human judgment.
Mike has intuition, Weil said. Feminine intuition, that is.
As for human judgment, I added, Mike isn't human, but all he knows he got from humans. Let's get you acquainted, and you judge his judgment. So I phoned. Hi, Mike.
Hello, man, my only male friend. Greetings. Wyo, my only female friend. I heard a third person. I conjecture that it may be Professor Bernardo de la Paz.
Prof looked startled, then delighted. I said, Too right, Mike. That's why I called you. Professor is not stupid.
Thank you, man. Professor Bernardo de la Paz, I am delighted to meet you.
I am delighted to meet you too, sir. Prof hesitated, went on.
My, Senor Holmes, may I ask how you knew that I was here?
I am sorry, sir, I cannot answer. Man, you know my methods.
Mike is being crafty, Prof. It involves something he learned doing a confidential job for me. So he threw me a hint to let you think that he had identified you by hearing your presence, and he can indeed tell much from respiration and heartbeat, mass, approximate age, sex, and quite a bit about health. Mike's medical storage is as full as any other.
I am happy to say, Mike added seriously, that I detect no signs of cardiac or respiratory trouble, unusual for a man of the professor's age who has spent so many years earthside. I congratulate you, sir.
Thank you, Senor Holmes.
My pleasure, Professor Bernardo de la Paz.
Once he knew your identity, he knew how old you are. When you were shipped, and what for. Anything that ever appeared about you in Lunatic, or Moonglow, or any lunar publication, including pictures. Your bank balance, whether you pay bills on time, and much more. Mike retrieved this in a split second once he had your name. What he didn't tell, because was my business, is that he knew I had invited you here. So it's a short jump to guess that you're still here when he heard heartbeat and breathing that matched you. Mike, no need to say Professor Bernardo de la Paz each time. Professor or prof is enough.
Noted, man. But he addressed me formally, with honorific.
So both of you relax. Prof, you scan it? Mike knows much, doesn't tell all, knows when to keep mouth shut.
I am impressed.
Mike is a fair dinkum thinkum, you'll see. Mike, I bet Professor 3-2 that Yankees would win pennant again. How chances?
I am sorry to hear it, man. The correct odds, this early in the year and based on past performances of teams and players, are 1-4.72 the other way.
Can't be that bad.
I'm sorry, man. I will print out the calculations if you wish, but I recommend that you buy back your wager. The Yankees have a favorable chance to defeat any single team, but the combined chances of defeating all teams in the league, including such factors as weather, accidents, and other variables for the season ahead, place the club on the short end of the odds I gave you.
Prof, want to sell that bet?
Certainly, Manuel.
Price?
$300 Hong Kong.
You old thief. Manuel, as your former teacher, I would be false to you if I did not permit you to learn from mistakes. Senor Holmes, Mike, my friend, may I call you friend?
Please do.
Mike almost purred.
Mike, amigo, do you also tout horse races? I often calculate odds on horse races. The civil service computermen frequently program such requests. But the results are so at variance with expectations that I have concluded either that the data are too meager, or the horses or riders are not honest. Possibly all three. However, I can give you a formula which will pay a steady return if played consistently.
Prof looked eager.
What is it, may one ask?
One may. Bet the leading apprentice jockey to place. He is always given good mounts, and they carry less weight.
but don't bet him on the nose.
Leading apprentice. Manuel, do you have the correct time?
Prof, which do you want? Get a bet down before post time, or settle what we set out to?
Sorry. Please carry on. Leading apprentice.
Mike, I gave you a recording last night. I leaned close to pickups and whispered,
Bastille Day.
Retrieved, man.
Thought about it?
In many ways. Y.O., you speak most dramatically. Thank you, Mike.
Prof, can you get your mind off ponies?
Huh? Certainly. I am all ears.
Then quit doing odds under your breath. Mike can do them faster.
I was not wasting time. The financing of joint ventures such as ours is always difficult. However, I shall table it. I am all attention.
I want Mike to do a trial projection.
Mike, in that recording you heard Wyo say we had to have free trade with Terra. You heard Prof say we should clamp an embargo on shipping food to Terra. Who's right?
Your question is indeterminate, man.
What did they leave out?
Shall I rephrase it, man?
Sure. Give us discussion.
In immediate terms, Wyo's proposal would be of great advantage to the people of Luna. The price of foodstuffs at Catapult Head would increase by a factor of at least 4. This takes into account a slight rise in wholesale prices on Terra. Slight, because the authority now sells at approximately the free market price. This disregards subsidized, dumped, and donated foodstuffs, most of which come from the large profit caused by the controlled low price at Catapult Head. I will say no more about minor variables, as they are swallowed by major ones. Let it stand that the immediate effect here would be a price increase on the close order of 4-fold.
Hear that, Professor?
Please, dear lady. I never disputed it.
The profit increase to the grower is more than 4-fold because, as Y.O. pointed out, he must now buy water and other items at controlled, high prices. Assuming a free market throughout the sequence, his profit enhancement will be of the close order of 6-fold. But this would be offset by another factor. Higher prices for exports would cause higher prices for everything consumed in Luna, goods and labor. The total effect would be an enhanced standard of living for all on the close order of 2-fold. This would be accompanied by vigorous effort to drill and seal more farming tunnels, mine more ice, improve growing methods, all leading to greater export. However, the Terran market is so large and food shortage so chronic that reduction in profit from increase of export is not a major factor.
Prof said, But, Signor Mike, that would only hasten the day that Luna is exhausted.
The projection was specified as immediate, Signor Professor. Shall I continue in longer range on the basis of your remarks?
By all means.
Luna's mass to 3 significant figures is 7.36 times 10 to the 19th power tons. Plus, holding other variables constant, including lunar and Terran populations, the present differential rate of export in tons could continue for 7.36 times 10 to the 12th years, before using up 1% of Luna. Round it as 7,000 billion years.
What? Are you sure?
You are invited to check, Professor.
I said, Mike, this a joke? If so, not funny even once.
It is not a joke, man.
Anyhow, Prof added, recovering, it's not Luna's crust we are shipping. It's our lifeblood. Water and organic matter, not rock.
I took that into consideration, Professor. This projection is based on controlled transmutation. Any isotope into any other, and postulating power for any reaction not exo-energetic. Rock would be shipped, transformed into wheat and beef and other foodstuffs.
But we don't know how to do that. Amigo, this is ridiculous.
But we will know how to do it.
Mike is right, Prof, I put in. Sure, today we haven't a glimmer, but we'll.
Mike, did you compute how many years till we have this? Might take a flyer in stocks.
Mike answered in sad voice. Man, my only male friend, save for the professor, whom I hope will be my friend. I tried. I failed. The question is indeterminate.
Why?
Because it involves a breakthrough in theory. There is no way in all my data to predict when and where genius may appear.
Prof sighed. Mike Amigo, I don't know whether to be relieved or disappointed. Then that projection didn't mean anything.
Of course it meant something, said Luayo. It means we'll dig it out when we need it. Tell him, Mike. Wyo, I am most sorry. Your assertion is, in effect, exactly what I was looking for. But the answer still remains. Genius is where you find it. No, I am so sorry.
I said, then Prof is right, when comes to placing bets?
One moment, man. There is a special solution suggested by the professor's speech last night. Return shipping, ton for ton.
Yes, but can't do that.
If the cost is low enough, Terrans would do so. That can be achieved with only minor refinement, not a breakthrough. To wit, freight transportation up from Terra as cheap as catapulting down to Terra.
You call this minor?
I call it minor compared with the other problem, man. Mike, dear, how long? When do we get it? Wyo, a rough projection, based on poor data and largely intuitive, would be on the order of 50 years.
50 years? Why, that's nothing. We can have free trade.
Wyo, I said on the order of. I did not say on the close order of.
Oh, it makes a difference?
It does, I told her. What Mike said was that he doesn't expect it sooner than 5 years, but would be surprised if much longer than 500. Eh, Mike?
Correct, man.
So need another projection. Prof pointed out that we ship water and organic matter and don't get it back. Agree, Wyo?
Oh, sure. I just don't think it's urgent. We'll solve it when we reach it.
Okay. Mike, no cheap shipping. No transmutation. How long till trouble?
7 years.
7 years?
Wyo jumped up, stared at phone.
Mike, honey, you don't mean that.
Wyo, he said plaintively. I did my best. The problem has an indeterminately large number of variables. I ran several thousand solutions using many assumptions. The happiest answer came from assuming no increase in tonnage, no increase in lunar population, restriction of births strongly enforced, and a greatly enhanced search for ice in order to maintain the water supply. That gave an answer of slightly over 20 years. All other answers were worse.
Wyo, much sobered, said,
"What happens in 7 years?" The answer of 7 years from now I reached by assuming the present situation, no change in authority policy, and all major variables extrapolated from the empiricals implicit in their past behavior, a conservative answer of highest probability from available data. 2082 is the year I expect food riots. Cannibalism should not occur for at least 2 years thereafter.
Cannibalism?
She turned and buried head against Prof's chest. He patted her, said gently, I'm sorry, Wyo. People do not realize how precarious our ecology is. Even so, it shocks me. I know water runs downhill, but didn't dream how terribly soon it will reach bottom. She straightened up, and the face was calm.
Okay, Professor, I was wrong. Embargo, it must be, and all that that implies. Let's get busy. Let's find out from Mike what our chances are. You trust him now, don't you?
Yes, dear lady, I do. We must have him on our side. Well, Manuel? Took time to impress Mike how serious we were, make him understand that jokes could kill us. This, machine, who could not know human death. And to get assurance
that he could and would protect secrets no matter what retrieval program was used. Even our signals, if not from us. Mike was hurt that I could doubt him, but matter too serious to risk slip. Then took 2 hours to program and reprogram and change assumptions and investigate side issues before all four, Mike, Prof, YO, Self, were satisfied that we had defined it, i.e., what chance had revolution, this revolution, headed by us, success required before Food Riot Day, against authority with bare hands, against power of all Terra, all 11 billions, to beat us down and inflict their will, all with no rabbits out of hats, with certainty of betrayal and stupidity and faint-heartedness, and fact that no one of us was genius, nor important in Luna affairs. Prof made sure that Mike knew history, psychology, economics, name it. Torda and Mike was pointing out far more variables than Prof. At last we agreed that programming was done, or that we could think of no other significant factor. Mike then said, "This is an indeterminate problem. How shall I solve it? Pessimistically or optimistically? Or a range of probabilities expressed as a curve, or several curves? Professor, my friend?"
"Manuel?" I said, "Mike, when I roll a die, it's 1 in 6 it turns ace. I don't ask shopkeeper to float it, nor do I caliper it, nor worry about somebody blowing on it. Don't give happy answer, nor pessimistic. Don't shove curves at us. Just tell in one sentence, what chances? Even? 1 in 1,000? None? Or whatever?"
"Yes, Manuel Garcia O'Kelly, my first male friend."
For 13.5 minutes was no sound, while Wyo chewed knuckles. Never known Mike to take so long. Must have consulted every book he ever read and worn edges off random numbers. Was beginning to believe that he had been overloaded, and either burnt out something or gone into cybernetic breakdown that requires computer equivalent of lobotomy to stop oscillations. Finally he spoke.
"Manuel, my friend, I am terribly sorry."
"What's the problem, Mike?"
"I have tried and tried, checked and checked. There is but one chance in 7 of winning."
"7. I look at Wyo. She looks at me. We laugh. I jump up and yip. "Hooray!" Wyo starts to cry, throws arms around Prof, kisses him. Mike said plaintively,
"I do not understand. The chances are 7 to 1 against us, not for us."
Wyo stopped slobbering Prof and said,
"Hear that? Mike said us. He included himself."
"Of course, Mike old Codbar, we understood. But ever know a loony to refuse a bet when he stood a big fat chance of 1 in 7?
"I have known only you 3. Not sufficient data for a curve."
"Well, we're loonies. Loonies bet. Hell, we have to. They shipped us up and bet us we couldn't stay alive. We fooled them. We'll fool them again. Wyo, where's your pouch? Get red hat. Put on Mike. Kiss him. Let's have a drink. 1 for Mike 2. Want a drink, Mike?"
"I wish that I could have a drink,"
Mike answered wistfully.
"As I have wondered about the subjective effect of ethanol on the human nervous system, I conjecture that it must be similar to a slight overvoltage, but since I cannot, please have one in my place."
"Program accepted. Running. Wyo, where's hat?"
Phone was flat to wall. Let into rock. No place to hang hat. So, we placed it on writing shelf, and toasted Mike, and called him comrade, and almost, he cried. His voice fogged up. Then Wyo borrowed Liberty Cap and put it on me and kissed me into conspiracy, officially this time, and so all out that my eldest wife would faint did she see. Then she took hat and put on Prof and gave him same treatment, and I was glad Mike had reported his heart okay. Then she put it on own head and went to phone, leaned close, mouth between binaurals, and made kissing sounds.
"That's for you, Mike, dear comrade. Is Michelle there?"
Blimey if he didn't answer in soprano voice.
Right here, darling. I am so happy.
So Michelle got a kiss, and I had to explain to Prof who Michelle was and introduce him. He was formal, sucking air and whistling and clasping hands. Sometimes I think Prof was not right in his head. Wayo poured more vodka. Professor caught her, mixed ours with coffee, hers with share, honey and all. "We have declared the revolution," he said firmly. "Now we execute it, with clear heads. Manuel, you were opted chairman. Shall we begin?"
"Mike is chairman," I said. "Obvious. Secretary, too. We'll never keep anything in writing. First security rule. With Mike, don't need to. Let's battle around and see where we are. I'm new to business."
"And," said Prof, "still on the subject of security, the secret of Mike should be restricted to this executive cell, subject to unanimous agreement, all three of us. Correction, all four of us. That is, must be extended."
"What secret?" asked Wyo. "Mike agreed to help our secrets. He's safer than we are. He can't be brainwashed."
Can you be, Mike, dear?"
"I could be brainwashed," Mike admitted, "by enough voltage, or by being smashed, or subjected to solvents, or positive entropy through other means. I find the concept disturbing. But if by brainwashing you mean I could be compelled to surrender our secrets, the answer is an unmodified negative."
I said, "Why? Prof means secret of Mike himself. Mike, old pal, you're our secret weapon. You know that, don't you?" He answered self-consciously,
"It was necessary to take that into consideration in computing the odds."
"How were odds without you, comrade? Bad?"
"They were not good. Not of the same order."
Won't press you. But a secret weapon must be secret. Mike, does anybody else suspect that you are alive?"
"Am I alive?"
His voice held tragic loneliness. Won't argue semantics. Sure, you're alive."
"I was not sure. It is good to be alive. No, Manny, my first friend. You three alone know it. My three friends."
"That's how must be if bets to pay off. It's okay? Us three, and never talk to anybody else?"
"But we'll talk to you lots,"
Wyo put in.
"It is not only okay," Mike said bluntly. "It is necessary. It was a factor in the odds."
"That settles it," I said. "They have everything else. We have Mike. We keep it that way. Say, Mike, I just had a horrid...
We fight Terra?" "We will fight Terra, unless we lose before that time."
Riddle this. Any computer smart as you? Any awake?" He hesitated.
"I don't know, man."
"No data?"
"Insufficient data. I have watched for both factors, not only in technical journals, but everywhere else. There are no computers on the market of my present capacity, but one of my model could be augmented just as I have been. Furthermore, an experimental computer of great capacity might be classified and go unreported in the literature."
Chance we have to take."
"Yes, man. There aren't any computers as smart as you, Mike,"
Wyo said scornfully.
"Don't be silly, Manny." "Wyo, man was not being silly. Man, I saw one disturbing report. It was claimed that attempts are being made at the University of Peiping to combine computers with human brains to achieve massive capacity. A computing cyborg."
"They say how?"
"The item was non-technical."
"Well, won't worry about what can't help. Right, Prof?"
"Correct, Manuel.
A revolutionist must keep his mind free of worry, or the pressure becomes intolerable."
"I don't believe a word of it," Wyo added. "We've got Mike, and we're going to win. Mike, dear,
You say we're going to fight Terra, and Manny says that's one battle we can't win. You have some idea of how we can win, or you wouldn't have given us even one chance in seven. So, what is it?
Throw rocks at them,
Mike answered. Not funny, I told him. Why, oh, don't borrow trouble. Haven't even settled how we leave this puka without being nabbed. Mike, Prof says 9 guards were killed last night, and Wyo says 27 is whole bodyguard, leaving 18. Do you know if that's true? Do you know where they are and what they're up to? Can't put on a revolution if we doesn't stir out. Prof interrupted. That's a temporary exigency, Manuel, one we can cope with. The point Wyoming raised is basic and should be discussed, and daily, until solved. I am interested in Mike's thoughts.
Okay. Okay.
But will you wait while Mike answers me?
Sorry, sir.
Mike?
Mike? Ma'am, the official number of Warden's bodyguards is 27. If 9 were killed, the official number is now 18.
You keep saying, official number, why?
I have incomplete data which might be relevant. Let me state them before advancing even tentative conclusions. Nominally, the security officer's department aside from clerks consists only of the bodyguard. But I handle payrolls for Authority Complex, and 27 is not the number of personnel charged against the security department.
Prof nodded.
Company spies. Hold it, Prof. Who are these other people?
Mike answered.
They are simply account numbers, man. I conjecture that the names they represent are in the security chief's data storage location.
Wait, Mike. Security Chief Alvarez uses you for files?
I conjecture that to be true, since his storage location is under a locked retrieval system.
I said, bloody, and added, Prof, isn't that sweet? He uses Mike to keep records. Mike knows where they are, can't touch them.
Why not, Manuel?
Try to explain to Prof and why all sorts of memory a thinkum has. Permanent memories that can't be erased because patterns be logic itself, how it thinks. Short-term memories used for current programs, and then erased, like memories which tell you whether you have honeyed coffee. Temporary memories held long as necessary. Milliseconds, days, years, but erased when no longer needed. Permanently stored data like a human being's education, but learned perfectly and never forgotten, though maybe condensed, rearranged, relocated, edited. And last but not finally, long lists of special memories ranging from memoranda files through very complex special programs, and each location tagged by own retrieval signal and locked or not, with endless possibilities on locked signals, sequential, parallel, temporal, situational, others.
Don't explain computers to laymen. Simpler to explain sex to a virgin.
Wyo couldn't see why, if Mike knew where Alvarez kept records, Mike didn't trot over and fetch.
I gave up.
Mike, can you explain?
I will try, man. Wyo, there is no way for me to retrieve locked data other than through external programming. I cannot program myself for such retrieval. My logic structure does not permit it. I must receive the signal as an external input.
Well, for Bog's sake, what is this precious signal?
It is, Mike said simply, Special File Zebra.
And waited. Mike, I said, unlock Special File Zebra. He did, and stuff started spilling out. Had to convince Wyo that Mike hadn't been stubborn. He hadn't. He almost begged us to tickle him on that spot. Sure he knew signal, had to, but had to come from outside. That was how he was built.
Mike, remind me to check with you all special-purpose locked retrieval signals. May strike ice other places.
So I conjectured, man.
Okay, we'll get to it later. Now back up and go over this stuff slowly. And Mike, as you read out, store again, without erasing, under Bastille Day, and tag it... Think file.
okay?
Programmed and running.
Do that with anything new he puts in, too.
Prime prize was list of names by warrants. Some 200. Each keyed with a code Mike identified with those blind pay accounts. Mike read out Hong Kong Luna list and was hardly started when Wyo gasped,
Stop, Mike! I've got to write these down!
I said, Hey, no writing. What's ho-ho?
That woman, Sylvia Chang, is Comrade Secretary back home, but that means the warden has our whole organization.
No, dear Wyoming, Prof corrected. It means we have his organization.
But...
I see what Prof means, I told her. Our organization is just us three and Mike, which Warden doesn't know. But now we know his organization. So shush and let Mike read. But don't write. You have this list from Mike anytime you phone him. Mike, note that Chang woman is organization secretary. Former organization in Kongville.
Noted.
Wyo boiled over as she heard names of undercover finks in her town, but limited herself to noting facts about ones she knew. Not all were comrades, but enough that she stayed riled up. Novy Leningrad names didn't mean much to us. Prof recognized three. Wyo, one. When came Luna City, Prof noted over half as being comrades. I recognized several. Not as fake subversives, but as acquaintances. Not friends. Don't know what it would do to me to find someone I trusted on Boss Fink's payroll. But would shake me. It shook Wyo. When Mike finished, she said,
I've got to get home. Never in my life have I helped eliminate anyone, but I am going to enjoy putting the black on those spies.
Prof said quietly, No one will be eliminated, dear Wyoming.
What? Professor, can't you take it? Though I've never killed anyone, I've always known it might have to be done.
He shook head. Killing is not the way to handle a spy. Not when he doesn't know that you know that he is a spy. She blinked.
I must be dense.
No, dear lady. Instead, you have a charming honesty, a weakness you must guard against. The thing to do with a spy is to let him breathe. Insist him with loyal comrades, and feed him harmless information to please his employers. These creatures will be taken into our organization. Don't be shocked. They will be in very special cells. Cages is a better word, but it would be the greatest waste to eliminate them. Not only would each spy be replaced with someone new, but also killing these traitors would tell the warden that we have penetrated his secrets. Mike, amigo mio, there should be in that file a dossier on me. Will you see?
There were long notes on Prof, and I was embarrassed as they added up to harmless old fool. He was tagged as a subversive. That was why he had been sent to the Rock, as a member of underground group in Luna City. But was described as a troublemaker in organization, one who rarely agreed with others. Prof dimpled and looked pleased.
I must consider trying to sell out and get myself placed on Warden's payroll.
Wyo did not think these funny, especially when he made clear was not joke, merely unsure tactic was practical.
Revolutions must be financed, dear lady. And one way is for a revolutionary to become a police spy. It is probably that some of those prima facie traitors are actually on our side.
I wouldn't trust them.
Ah, yes. That is the rub with double agents, to be certain where their loyalties, if any, lie. Do you wish your own dossier, or would you rather hear it in private?
Wyo's records showed no surprises. Warden Sphinx had tabbed her years back. But I was surprised that I had a record, too. Routine check, made when I was cleared to work in a third complex. Was classed as non-political, and someone had added, not too bright. Which was both unkind and true. Or, why would I get mixed up in revolution?
Prof had Mike stop readout, hours more, leaned back, and looked thoughtful.
One thing is clear, he said. The warden knew plenty about Wyoming and myself long ago, but you, Manuel, are not on his blacklist.
After last night?
Ah, so. Mike, do you have anything in that file entered in the last 24 hours?
Nothing, Prof said.
Wyoming is right that we cannot stay here forever. Manuel, how many names did you recognize? 6, was it? Did you see any of them last night?
No, but might have seen me.
More likely they missed you in the crowd. I did not spot you until I came down front, and I've known you since you were a boy. But it is most unlikely that Wyoming traveled from Hong Kong and spoke at the meeting without her activity being known to the warden.
He looked at Wyo.
Dear lady, could you bring yourself to play the nominal role of an old man's folly?
I suppose so. How, Professor?
Manuel is probably in the clear. I am not, but from my dossier it seems unlikely that the authority sphinx will bother to pick me up. You, they may wish to question, or even to hold. You are rated as dangerous. It would be wise for you to stay out of sight. This room, I'm thinking of renting it for a period, weeks or even years. You could hide in it, if you do not mind the obvious construction that would be placed on your staying here.
Wyo chuckled.
Why, you darling, do you think I care what anyone thinks? I'd be delighted to play the role of your bundle baby. And don't be too sure I'd just be playing.
Never tease an old dog, he said mildly. He might still have one bite.
I may occupy that couch most nights. Manuel, I intend to resume my usual ways, and so should you. While I feel that it will take a busy Cossack to arrest me, I will sleep sounder in this hideaway. But in addition to being a hideout, this room is good for cell meetings. It has a phone.
Mike said,
Professor, may I offer a suggestion?
Certainly, amigo. We want your thoughts.
I conclude that the hazards increase with each meeting of our executive cell. But meetings need not be corporal. You can meet, and I can join you, if I am welcome, by phone.
You are always welcome, Comrade Mike. We need you.
However,
Prof looked worried. I said, Prof, don't worry about anybody listening in. I explained how to place a Sherlock call.
Phones are safe if Mike supervises call.
Reminds me, you haven't been told how to reach Mike.
How, Mike? Prof used my number?
Between them, they settled on Mysterious. Mysterious. Prof and Mike shared childlike joy and intrigue for own sake. I suspect Prof enjoyed being rebel long before he worked out his political philosophy. While Mike, how could human freedom matter to him? Revolution was a game that gave him companionship and chance to show off talents.
Mike was as conceited a machine as you are ever likely to meet.
But we still need this room, Prof said, reaching into pouch, hauling out thick wad of bills. I blinked.
Prof, robbed a bank?
Not recently. Perhaps again in the future, if the cause requires it. A rental period of 1 lunar should do as a starter. Will you arrange it, Manuel? The management might be surprised to hear my voice. I came in through a delivery door.
I called manager, bargained for dated key. 4 weeks. He asked 900 Hong Kong. I offered 900 authority. He wanted to know how many would use room. I asked if it was policy of Raffles to snoop affairs of guests. We settled at 475 Hong Kong. I sent up bills. He sent down 2 dated keys. I gave 1 to Wyo, 1 to Prof. Kept 1 day key, knowing they would not reset lock unless we failed to pay at end of lunar. Earthside, I ran into insolent practice of requiring hotel guests to sign CHOP, even show identification. I asked, what next, food?
I'm not hungry, Manny.
Manuel,
You asked us to wait while Mike settled your questions. Let's get back to the basic problem. How are we to cope when we find ourselves facing Terra, David facing Goliath?
Oh, been hoping that would go away.
Mike, you really have ideas?
I said I did, man, he answered plaintively. We can throw rocks.
Bog's sake, no time for jokes.
But man, he protested, we can throw rocks at Terra. We will.
8.
Took time to get through my skull that Mike was serious, and scheme might work. Then took longer to show Wyo and Prof how second part was true. Yet both parts should have been obvious. Mike reasoned so. What is war? One book defined war as use of force to achieve political result. And force is action of one body on another applied by means of energy. In war this is done by weapons. Luna had none. But weapons, when Mike examined them as class, turned out to be engines for manipulating energy. And energy Luna has plenty. Solar flux alone is good for around 1 kilowatt per square meter of surface at lunar noon. Sun power, though cyclic, is effectively unlimited. Hydrogen fusion power is almost as unlimited and cheaper, once ice is mined. Magnetic pinch bottle set up. Luna has energy. How to use? But Luna also has energy of position. She sits atop of gravity well, 11 kilometers per second deep, and kept from falling in by curb only 2.5 kilometers per second high. Mike knew that curb. Daily he tossed grain freighters over it, let them slide downhill to Terra. Mike had computed what would happen if a freighter grossing 100 tons, or same mass of rock, falls to Terra, unbraked. Kinetic energy as it hits is 6.25 times 10 to the 12 joules, over 6 trillion joules. This converts in split second to heat. Explosion. Big one.
Should have been obvious. Look at Luna. What do you see? Thousands and thousands of craters. Places where somebody got playful throwing rocks.
Wyo said, Joules don't mean much to me. How does that compare with H-bombs?
I started to round off in head.
Mike's head works faster, he answered. The concussion of 100-ton mass on Terra approaches the yield of a 2-kiloton atomic bomb.
Kilo is 1,000, Wyo murmured. And mega is 1,000,000. Why, that's only 1/50,000th as much as 100-megaton bomb. Wasn't that the size Soviet Union used?
Wyo, honey, I said gently, that's not how it works. Turn it around. 2-kiloton yield is equivalent to exploding 2,000,000 kilograms of trinitrotoluol. And a kilo of TNT is quite an explosion. Ask a drill man. 2,000,000 kilos will wipe out good-sized town. Check, Mike?
Yes, man. But Wyo, my only female friend, there is another aspect. Multi-megaton fusion bombs are insufficient. The explosion takes place in too small a space. Most of it is wasted. While a 100-ton megaton bomb is rated as having 50,000 times the yield of a 2-kiloton bomb, its destructive effect is only about 1,300 times as great as that of a 2-kiloton explosion.
But it seems to me that 1,300 times is still quite a lot if they are going to use bombs on us that much bigger.
True, Wyo, my female friend. But Luna has many rocks.
Oh. Yes, so we have.
Comrades, said Prof, this is outside my competence. In my younger, or bomb-throwing, days, my experience was limited to something of the order of the 1 kilogram chemical explosion of which you spoke, Manuel. But I assume that you two know what you are talking about.
We do,
Mike agreed. So I accept your figures. To bring it down to a scale that I could understand, this plan requires that we capture the catapult. No?
Yes,
Mike and I chorused.
Not impossible. Then we must hold it and keep it operative. Mike, have you considered how your catapult can be protected against, let us say, one small H-tipped torpedo. Discussion went on and on. We stopped to eat. Stopped the business under Prof's rule. Instead, Mike told jokes. Each produced a "that reminds me" from Prof. By time we left Raffles Hotel evening of 14th May, 75, we had, Mike had, with help from Prof, outlined plan of revolution, including major options at critical points. When came time to go, me to home and Prof to evening class, if not arrested, then home for bath and clothes and necessities in case he returned that night, became clear Wyo did not want to be alone in Strange Hotel.
Wyo was stout when bets were down, between times, soft and vulnerable.
So I called Mom on a Sherlock and told her was bringing house guest home. Mom ran her job with style. Any spouse could bring guest home for meal or year, and our second generation was almost as free, but must ask. Don't know how other families work. We have customs firmed by a century. They suit us. So Mom didn't ask name, age, sex, marital condition. Was my right, and she too proud to ask. All she said was, "That's nice, dear. Have you two had dinner? It's Tuesday, you know." Tuesday was to remind me that our family had eaten early because Greg preaches Tuesday evenings. But if guests had not eaten, dinner would be served. Concession to guest, not to me. As with exception of Grandpa, we ate when was on table, or scrounged standing up in pantry. I assured her we had eaten, and would make tall effort to be there before she needed to leave. Despite loony mixture of Muslims, Jews, Christians, Buddhists, and 99 other flavors, I suppose Sunday is communist day for church. But Greg belongs to sec that had calculated that sundown Tuesday to sundown Wednesday, local time Garden of Eden, zone minus 2, Terra, was the Sabbath. So we ate early in Terran Northern Hemisphere summer months. Mom always went to hear Greg preach, so was not considerate to place duty on her that would clash. All of us went occasionally. I managed several times a year because terribly fond of Greg, who taught me one trade and helped me switch to another when I had to, and would gladly have made it his arm rather than mine. But Mom always went, ritual not religion, for she admitted to me one night in pillow talk that she had no religion with a brand on it, then cautioned me not to tell Greg. I exacted same caution from her. I don't know who is cranking. I'm pleased he doesn't stop. But Greg was Mom's boy husband, opted when she was very young, first wedding after her own, very sentimental about him, would deny fiercely if accused of loving him more than other husbands, yet took his faith when he was ordained and never missed a Tuesday. She said, "Is it possible that your guest would wish to attend church?" I said would see, but anyhow we would rush, and said goodbye. Then banged on bathroom door and said, "Hurry with skin, Wyo. We're short on minutes." "1 minute," she called out. She's an girlish girl. She appeared in 1 minute. "How do I look?" she asked. "Prof, will I pass?"
"Dear Wyoming, I am amazed. You were beautiful before, you are beautiful now, but utterly unrecognizable. You're safe, and I am relieved."
Then we waited for Prof to transform into old derelict. He would be it to his back corridor, then reappear as well-known teacher in front of class, to have witnesses in case a yellow boy was waiting to grab him. It left a moment. I told Wyo about Greg. She said, "Nanny, how good is this makeup? Would it pass in church? How bright are the lights?"
"No brighter than here. Good job. You'll get by. But do you want to go to church? Nobody pushing."
She thought. "It would please your mother, I mean, your senior wife, would it not?"
I answered slowly.
"Wyo, religion is your pigeon. But since you ask, yes, nothing would start you better in Davis family than going to church with Mom. I'll go if you do."
"I'll go. I thought your last name was O'Kelly."
"Is. Tack Davis on with hyphen if want to be formal. Davis is first husband.
dead 50 years. His family name and all our wives are Gospodja Davis, hyphened, with every male name in Davis line plus her family name. In practice, Mom is only Gospodja Davis. Can call her that. And others use first name and add Davis if they write a check or something. Except that Ludmilla is Davis Davis, because proud of double membership, birth and option. I see. Then if a man is John Davis, he's a son. But if he has some other last name, he's your co-husband. But a girl would be Jenny Davis either way, wouldn't she? How do I tell? By her age? No, that wouldn't help. I'm confused. And I thought clan marriages were complex. Or polyandries. Though mine wasn't. At least my husband's had the same last name. No trouble. When you hear a woman about 40 address a 15-year-old as Mama Miller, you'll know which is wife and which is daughter. Not even that complex, as we don't have daughters home past husband high. They get opted. But might be visiting. Your husbands were named Nat? Oh, no. Fedosiv. Choi Lin and Choi Mu. I took back my born name. Out came Prof. Cackled Sinelli. Looked even worse than earlier. We left by 3 exits. Made rendezvous in main corridor. Open formation. Wyo and I did not walk together, as I might be nabbed. On other hand, she did not loan Lunar City, a warrant so complex, even native-born get lost. So I led, and she had to keep me in sight. Prof trailed to make sure she didn't lose me. If I was picked up, Wyo would find public phone, report to Mike, then return to hotel and wait for Prof. But I felt sure that any yellow jacket who arrested me would get a caress from number 7 arm. No, ho-ho. Up to level 5 and cross town by Carver Causeway. Up to level 3 and stop at Tube Station West to pick up arms and toolkit. But not pea suit. Would not have been in character. I stored it there. One yellow uniform at station showed no interest in me. South by well-lighted corridors until necessary to go outward to reach private easement Lock 13. To co-op pressure tunnels serving Davis tunnels and a dozen other farms. I suppose Prof dropped off there, but I never looked back. I delayed locking through our door until Wyo caught up. Then Soon was saying, "Mom, allow me to present Wyma Beth Johnson." Mom took her in arms, kissed cheek, said, "So glad you could come. Wyma, dear, our house is yours." See why I love our old biddy? Could have quick frosted Wyo with same words, but was real. And Wyo knew. Hadn't warned Wyo about switching names. Thought of it en route. Some of our kids were small, and while they grew up despising Warden, no sense in risking prattle about Wyoming Knot who's visiting us. That name was listed in Special File Zebra. So, I missed warning her. Was new to conspiracy. But Wyo cut cue, and never bobbled. Greg was in preaching clothes, and would have to leave in minutes. Mom did not hurry. Took Wyo down line of husbands. Grandpa, Greg, Hans. Then up line of wives. Ludmilla, Lenore, Sidrus, Anna. With steadily grace. And then started on our kids. I said, "Mom, excuse me, want to change arms." Her eyebrows went up a millimeter, meaning, "We'll speak of this, but not in front of children." So I added, "No, it's late. Greg's sneaking look at watch, and Wyma and I are going to church. So excuse, please." She relaxed. "Certainly, dear." As she turned away, I saw her arm go around Wyo's waist, so I relaxed. I changed arms, replacing number 7 with social arm, but was excused to duck into phone cupboard and punch Mycroft XXX. "Mike, we're home. But about to go to church. Don't think you can listen there, so I'll check in later. Heard from Prof?"
"Not yet, man. Which church is it? I may have some circuit."
"Pillar of Fire, Repentance Tabernacle."
"No reference."
"Slow to my speed, pal. Meets in West 3 Community Hall. That's south of station on ring about number..."
"I have it. There's a pickup inside for channels, and a phone in the corridor outside. I'll keep an ear on both."
"I don't expect trouble, Mike.
It's what Professor said to do. He is reporting now. Do you wish to speak to him?
No time. Bye.
That set pattern. Always keep in touch with Mike. Let him know where you are, where you plan to be. Mike would listen if he had nerve ends there. Discovery I made that morning, that Mike could listen at dead phone. Suggested it. Discovery bothered me. Don't believe in magic. But on thinking, I realized the phone could be switched on by central switching system without human intervention. His switching system had volition. Mike had Bossuya volition. How Mike knew a phone was outside that hall is hard to say, since space could not mean to him what means to us. But he carried in storage a map, structure relations, of Luna City's engineering, and could almost always fit what we said to what he knew as Luna City. Hardly ever got lost. So from day Cabal started, we kept in touch with Mike and each other through his widespread nervous system. Won't mention it again unless necessary. Mom and Greg and Wyo were waiting at our door, Mom chomping but smiling. I saw she had lent Wyo a stole. Mom was as easy about skin as any loony. Nothing new chummish. But Church was another matter. We made it, although Greg went straight to platform and we to seats. I settled in warm, mindless state, going through motions. But Wyo did really listen to Greg's sermon, and either knew our hymn book or was accomplished sight reader. When we got home, young ones were in bed, and most adults. Hans and Sidris were up, and Sidris served cocosoy and cookies. Then all turned in. Mom assigned Wyo a room in tunnel most of our kids lived in, one which had had two smaller boys last time I noticed. Did not ask how she had reshuffled. Was clear she was giving my guest best we had. Or would have put Wyo with one of older girls. I slept with Mom that night, partly because our senior wife is good for nerves, and nerve-wracking things had happened, and partly so she would know I was not sneaking to Wyo's room after things were quiet. My workshop, where I slept when slept alone, was just one bend from Wyo's door. Mom was telling me, plain as print,
"Go ahead, dear. Don't tell me if you wish to be mean about it. Sneak behind my back."
Which neither of us admitted. We visited as we got ready for bed, chatted after light out. Then I turned over. Instead of saying good night, Mom said,
"Manuel, why does your sweet little guest make herself up as an afro? I would think that her natural coloration would be more becoming. Not that she isn't perfectly charming the way she chooses to be."
So, rolled over and faced her, and explained. Sounded thin, so filled in, and found self telling all, except one point. Mike. I included Mike, but not as computer. Instead, as a man Mom was not likely to meet, for security reasons. But telling Mom, taking her into my sub-cell, should say, to become leader of own cell in turn, taking Mom into conspiracy was not case of husband who can't keep from blurting everything to his wife. At most was hasty, but was best time if she was to be told. Mom was smart. Also able executive. Running big family without baring teeth requires that. Was respected among farm families and throughout Luna City. She had been up longer than 90%. She could help. And would be indispensable inside family. Without her help, Wyo and I would find it sticky to use phone together. Hard to explain. Keep kids from noticing. Impossible. But with Mom's help, would be no problems inside household. She listened, sighed, said,
"It sounds dangerous, dear."
"Is," I said. "Look, Mimi, if you don't want to tackle, say so, then forget what I've told."
"Manuel, don't even say that. You are my husband, dear. I took you for better, for worse. And your wish is my command."
My word. Huh. What a lie. But Mimi believed it.
"I would not let you go into danger alone," she went on. "And besides..."
"What, Mimi?"
I think every loony dreams of the day when we will be free.
All but some